Agenda, August 10th, 2021, 4 o'clock p.m. Before we start, we'll read a copy of the Open Meetings Act, Nebraska Revised State Statute 84-1407 through 84-1414 is posted on the back wall of the meeting room. Prior to turning to the agenda for today's meeting, I would like to announce the procedure that will be used for this meeting. With respect to each agenda item, the directors will hear first staff proposals and recommendations. Then the public will be given the opportunity to speak to the item. Lastly, the directors will discuss the item and take action, and we ask that the public not interrupt the directors' discussion and action. Thank you. Quorum call.
Howard.
Here.
Jeff.
Here.
Christy.
Here.
Teaser. Here.
Here. Item number four, adoption of agenda.
Second.
Motion and a second. Roll call.
Jeff?
Yes. Yes.
Caesar?
Yes.
Teller?
Yes.
Aye. Item number five, proof of publication of meeting notice. We have proof of publication, which will become part of the permanent record. Item number six, presentation on integrated management plan annual report, Paul Woodard and Jennifer Shelpepper, NDR, NR. All right.
Good evening. We'll go ahead and get kicked off here. Jennifer Shelpepper is with me. She's with the Department of Natural Resources, the head of the water planning division.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she's worked with us a lot on our IMP. So this is just an annual update we give. Kinds of ends up being the formal or the report that's saved each year for this. So this is reviewing data from 2020. So go ahead. Oh yeah, got it. There we go. So wanted to give a quick review on a couple things. One, how do all these, we have these different planning documents, how do they all kind of work together? The basin plan, which is among seven NRDs and DNR, kind of feeds information into our IMP. The drought contingency plan could feed more information in. Any other technical studies we do. But basically the integrated management plan is how to address water quantity in our hydrologically connected areas. And that'll be an important thing to think about is those, what are those hydrologically connected areas, both now as we're going through another update, and then in the future that might change with some modeling that we'll discuss here. And then if there are certain requirements that come out of that that say we need to actually have in terms of regulations, then those need to go into our groundwater management plan and into our rules and regulations. So that's kind of the flow of things in our setup here. Where did I hold that? Hold it here. It's on. Did I go too far? Okay. So the IMP was a voluntary plan adopted in 2014. It really had four goals. Or four things to us to work, for us to work on in general. Those are water policies and practices, supply and use inventory of our water quantity, educational programs, and then continuing to work with everybody in the basin-wide plan. Go ahead. Why do we conduct these annual reviews? So it's kind of an iterative process, if you will. We're continually assessing whether the plan is kind of working and then going back and saying, should we make some updates, some changes, some recommendations. So that's what we're going to talk about tonight. What have we done? Where are we headed? Go ahead. The map here, so that's our entire district. The only part that this covers, the integrated management plan covers those areas that are connected watershed-wise to the Platte and the Elkhorn River. And then the blue area that you see, go ahead, one more, I think it'll zoom in on that. Is our area that's considered hydrologically connected at this time. So that's where we implement our groundwater controls. We currently have a limit of 2,500 acres per year. So new people come in, they say, I want to drill a well and put in a new pivot. We say, okay, provide us some information. We do ours on a first-come, first-served basis, so if we ever got to the point where enough people came in and we used all 2,500 acres by June, we'd say, well, we're done for the year. That's never really happened. We don't have quite that much demand. And as you'll see, DNR's numbers tonight, too, they don't have quite that much demand in our district either. Go ahead. So what are we monitoring? The NRD, we're monitoring the expansion of the irrigated acres from groundwater use, doing groundwater level measurements, and then we're also working with municipalities to provide us their annual data of how much water they used. So, go ahead. And DNR, we'll go over.
Thanks, Paul. We look at stream gauge measurements, our surface water permitting activities, surface water pump site inspections, so that's where folks are actually pumping surface water out of the river, and any use of the surface water for irrigation. So I think we'll go into each of these in a little more detail with the next slide.
So first, our groundwater levels, we'll cover that. We take those every year in the spring and sometimes get them in the fall as well. So what you see up there is the actual depth to water is labeled, and then whether it's above or below. So blue would be if the reading was above the average that we've seen over the time we've been taking some of these measurements since 1978. Is it over that for the year, or is it under? And you can see a kind of a mix last year of highs and lows. And again, that was taken in the spring. We probably had some more declines that occurred, because you'll see last year was a fairly to pretty dry year for our region. But a lot of that has already rebounded again by this year. So we're still sitting in pretty good shape. Go ahead to the next one. Here are the different irrigated acres. So last year we did have people come in for only 205 new irrigated acres. Which was a depletion to the river, and we track that for the basin plan of 28.5 acre feet. So that's kind of feeds into some numbers we'll show you in a few minutes. Go ahead. And then finally, the municipal use that we're tracking. This has all the years that we've requested data from the municipalities. So, one of the notes on there would be like MUD West and Fremont would be only wells in our district. So MUD West probably pumps more than that, but some of it's coming from the Saunders County side. And Fremont pumps more than that, but that's coming from Dodge County. So otherwise, those are the total amounts of water pumped for municipal use in that IMP area, in that Platte Elkhorn River area.
Thanks, Paul. So then DNR data collection. This table shows you the surface water appropriations that have either expired, were canceled in part, or canceled in full in the 2020 calendar year in the Integrated Management Plan area. So we just had three of those that were canceled. So it was a surface water right that existed at one time or that we issued, and then folks lost it, or in the last case, it was actually a temporary permit that had expired. So lots of different ways for permits to go in and out of existence. And in 2020, listed up at the top there, we don't have a table because we didn't have any new applications that were approved. So no new applications for surface water that were approved in 2020. Next slide, please. The IMP also discusses the collection of stream gauging data in a number of other areas across the state. DNR has our own stream gauges that we manage, but as it happens in the Papio NRD, we do not have any stream gauges. They are actually managed here by the USGS. So we are reporting on those three USGS stream gauges that are available. Next slide, please. Some details on those. We have the Lashara gauge here on the Platte River. We show the data from 1995 through 2020 with the average total discharge annually as well as a 10-year moving average. So you can see you have quite a bit of annual variation in the flow of the Platte River here. Next slide, please. And then also we have the Elkhorn River at Waterloo. We have a much longer record here from 1929 through 2020. So we have a 25-year moving average as well as the average annual total discharge. And you can see in this data, it appears our moving average is going up over time. Next gauge, please. Next slide, please. And then we have another one on the Platte River at Louisville. So this is further downstream. The record here is from 1958 through 2020. Again, average annual discharge, the total, as well as by year, and then a 25-year moving average again, which is showing a slight increase through time. Next. The data that our staff do go out and collect are a voluntary surface water use reporting. So we send this out to anyone who has a surface water right in our district, and we do this every year. And it's voluntary at this point, not mandatory. And so of those that responded, we track what the responses were. We've got 53% that are irrigated with surface water only. We have 7% that are irrigated with surface water and groundwater, and we have 4% of the respondents that were irrigated with groundwater only, so they didn't use surface water that in 2020 on their land. And then it looks like 36% of the respondents said that they did not irrigate at all in 2020. Next slide. We also collect from the field itself folks who we can see irrigation going on in the field, basically. So our field staff are out there and they look and see, do they seem to have equipment? Does it look like they're irrigating on the day that we're out there? So in 2020, we inspected 9 pump sites in this NRD for 11 different appropriations. And of all those sites, only one of them had a pump site that was set up and running a subsurface irrigation system in 2020. And you can see there's, you know, changes through time in the amount of folks that were able to visit in any given year and the number of pumps that are inspected. Next slide. So now we'll move on to the goals. I think, Paul, you're going to talk at this point.
Yeah, so just going back to the different goals and what we've accomplished in those in the time frame, mostly through last year, but this kind of accumulation of things. Go ahead. So we've continued as a requirement to continue to support the lower Platte weed management efforts, that being the helicopter spraying and stuff to fight back invasive species, which would be a detrimental water use on the river or in the river itself. We've continued to work on the basin plan. Of course, that was finally adopted in 2017. We are coming up on the end of that first increment, which is one of the things we're fixing to have another analysis done at the end of this year. And then there will be a decision made by that basin group and then brought back to our NRDs as to extending that for another 5 years based on the information that was acquired. So that'll be something you guys will need to look at and review probably coming up at the beginning of this next year once all that data is combined together. So the basin plan will kind of keep working, keep going on, but we got to keep updating that. So the groundwater management plan was revised and adopted in March 2018, and we're currently implementing that. And then the drought contingency plan was adopted and formalized in 2019. Go ahead. So goal two, to develop a better water use and supply inventory. We had the Platte and Elkhorn River monitoring study, which involved those groundwater level gauges. We've had a complete water balance study done. Again, we collect that municipal data. We're trying to look at ways to enhance our weather and climate data. One of those was a new station up in Western Washington County that collects data, but we're always looking, talking with the Weather Service about how we'll improve that. And a lot of data is collected by DNR as well in terms of weather and climate information, because they put that every year into the different models. So, and then you see the models listed down there. So the Lower Platte Missouri TRIBS model was prepared by DNR. Basically, at the request of the NRDs, haven't gone through the full analysis using that model yet because we're hoping we can update it with AEM data. And that's the other project they're listed at the end, is the NRD is going to working with a grant from the Water Sustainability Fund and in taking our AEM data to put that into a 3D model that can be then be put into the groundwater model. So that's that part. Go ahead. Maybe you want to talk a little bit about the model.
Sure. As Paul said, we do have a Lower Platte Missouri TRIBS groundwater model. The decision was made between the NRDs and DNR that we wanted to put some AEM data into that model before we proceeded with the development of stream depletion factors or anything like that. So we have currently a pilot study in the Lower Elkhorn NRD for taking that AEM data, putting it into the groundwater model. It's turning it from a two-layer model into a five-layer model, so the geology will be more complicated based upon that AEM data. We are to the point where that the first pilot is done, and so we've expanded it to the entire NRD area using the same methodologies and process, and that model is in the calibration phase right now, and we're starting to test that calibration. So we should have some results from that to begin presenting to the basin-wide group very soon. And then, as Paul mentioned, following on that, you guys also have some AEM data, and we've got that Water Sustainability Fund grant to move through the same process with your AEM data so we could start to bring it into the model, create that more complicated geology with the five layers, and see what the model analysis results look like from that. In addition to these areas, we also are doing the same thing with Lower Platte North NRD, as well as Lower Platte South NRD is seeking a Water Sustainability Fund grant to do the same thing. So each NRD is a little bit at a different point in time for getting that AEM data brought in. But the goal is to bring it all in eventually, you know, at the same time when we decide to actually do the model analysis, to have all that data from each of the NRDs available to put into the model. As I mentioned, we are using that for stream depletion factor development. So that tells us when you have a well in the geology and you pump that well, how much is it going to impact the stream? We're going to look at specific watershed zones for specific tributaries. So we'll have an idea of by those different streams what depletion factor would account for each of those streams. Next. And as we get that developed, then we will be sharing that model and those results with the NRDs as we're developing with you guys, so you could also look at that. Next. And in addition to what we have in the Lower Platte Missouri TRIBS area, there's also a Nemaha model, which is further south that we're working on as well, but it's been put on hold until we explore some of this AEM data. Next slide.
Okay. So what you guys might see in the future on that is that to complete the modeling, there might be some joint work or some independent consultant that has to help bring that into the model. So, but we'll determine that once that portion of the data is done. Goal three was working on education and outreach. We've done that in several different ways. Again, we haven't. It's been harder over the pandemic season to do that here. We did participate in the online World of Water. Again, it'll be online again this year for World of Water. So, but hopefully we'll have other opportunities to get out and provide some information to folks. Really working also on urban water conservation education, not just in the rural irrigation area. So go ahead. Here, just to look at a couple of events. DNR also did a couple of events, both the Women in Agriculture Conference, and there wasn't a Husker Harvest Days last year, so
no
that didn't go on, no state fair. So we missed out on a few of our events, but hopefully we'll get another chance to do that this year. Go ahead. Maybe you want to mention the insight analysis that's going on.
Yeah, so another outreach tool that we have available on our website is Insight, And the bottom of that graphic really shows you the beginning of the data and information that can be available there if you haven't visited it. I highly encourage you to go there and look. We have data on water supply and water use and the balance of those across the state for all the basins that you see highlighted on that map. So right now we have most of the area across Nebraska covered. So you can see specifically in the Lower Platte. And that's the analysis that we will be updating as part of the basin wide group that Paul mentioned earlier that will be coming back to your board and back to the basin-wide group for the evaluation of an extension of that basin-wide plan. Next slide. We also have some interactive web tools that teach folks about hydrologically connected groundwater and surface water with some interactive graphics. I don't have the interactive part here, but you could go to that link on our website and interact with the rainfall and the water table and see what happens if you change any of those inputs and how the stream is affected by that. In addition, we're also working with the University of Nebraska, who is working, I believe, with the NARD as well to develop some modules on integrated management planning. They're also working on stuff for DEE, so water quality, and we're excited that the first one of those is going to be released next week, so that's another area where we're working on public outreach. Next slide.
The last goal here to go over is our coordination, and obviously you've seen that we're doing that with the basin plan and with the drought mitigation plan. We're working with other districts. Also, you know, the drought plan has involved Lincoln Water and MUD, so we're kind of working with everybody that has, you know, kind of a stake in our area in water use. So go ahead. Yeah, for the next 2 years, our plan is to work hard on getting that model ready and using the AEM data. So that'll be a lot of what you hear about. Continue the basin-wide and regional planning efforts. One thing is if the data comes back from this insight analysis, just using the current tools that we have, we won't be using the new model to do that. We'll be using the older tools. And we have similar results. Basically, that when we extend that five-year window, say from 2021 to 2026, if that's our next window, then that gives us time to do this modeling. I mean, that's kind of the goal of having some cushion in there to do the modeling. And so the next time we say we're done with our 5 years, we'll be using new information to go off of when we do that. So go ahead. Sorry, go back. I didn't realize we clicked. Okay. The other things we're going to do, the NRD has to finish up doing our certified irrigated acres. We got pretty good work on that. Since the beginning of the year, we had about respondents of about 67% of people that got back to us on certified irrigated acres. So we'll go back and reach out one more time, trying to get everybody involved with doing that. So that was pretty good, I thought, for the beginning of this year. And we'll try to do some of the education events as they become available. All right, go ahead. We are currently, just so you know, we haven't really amended our IMP to match the basin plan, which would be you have so many acre feet of depletion each year. We're still going off of you have so many acres to develop each year. And we'll probably, once we get this analysis back on where we sit for the next 5 years, then we might say amend the IMP, but the recommendation right now, go ahead, I think, would be to not do any current changes right now. So, go ahead. Okay. This is the kind of complicated accounting that we submit to the basin plan, but the main thing to know, is this laser work?
Yes.
Is that, you know, currently for the whole area, we are still at 76% remaining. So our district, we haven't used, you know, we've used maybe less than 12% of what was we could have used in the basin plan, and we're going into our fifth year of that. And then for the entire, all of the NRDs combined and DNRs, you know, anytime there's a surface water use or something like that, we're at a total of still 76% remaining of that. So that'll also be factored in when we go into the next 5 years. This number just kind of carries over in terms of how much new development have we. That's really a measurement of how much new development have we had in terms of new water uses. So go ahead. I think that's close to the end. Oh, this is our final accounting of over the years where we've been at. So each year we factored in what the NRD approved for groundwater uses and then what the DNR approved for other for surface water uses. Jennifer mentioned those few that came off the books this year. That's what that negative is showing. Some came off the books, so we balanced out a little bit there.
Google, Facebook.
I think that's the end. Yeah. Are there any questions on kind of the overall IMP or the any of the other plans that we've had have going on?
Thanks for your presentation. Anyone from the public here to speak to this item tonight? Directors? Director Bradley?
A question. When the DNR, check 1-2, when DNR does inspections on the pump sites, are they announced, or do you the landowner know you're coming, or do you just make a surprise inspection?
That is a good question that I don't know for sure the answer to, but I don't think we announce that because we have the authority to go on to those lands as needed to, you know, enact the authorities that we have under statute. So I think there's a general issue in everybody's order when they're issued that water right that says DNR has the right to come and do those inspections as needed. But I would have to check to be for sure if they send a letter or not ahead of time, but I don't think so.
Okay, it's well, I'm a former inspector, so that's sort of good to know. And then I guess I don't know if this is too related, but has water usage been going up around the part where down the road from here? I think it's Facebook or Google or those big computer hubs. Are they using up a lot of water? Is that?
I haven't seen a surface water permit for them. Do you know if they have groundwater?
They're all connected through MUD.
Okay.
So, and basically MUD is still operating under the same, you know, with the three treatment plants that they have. They're still way under those maximums that they could use. So that's actually already taken out of this accounting. Like, if MUD uses the maximum, this is still extra above that.
Okay, because you probably know this, but we're seeing in, like, cities like Austin or other places that they're just using tremendous amounts of water. At the same time, they're going through droughts and what have you. So I was just wondering about that and if we're part of the plan, we're monitoring this.
Do you have that kind of detail? Like separate out any large users?
No. So just those bulk numbers that you saw on the plan is what we get from the municipalities about how much water did they actually, that's how much they actually pumped out of the ground. No. Some of that might leak through the pipes. Some of that actually, you know, most of it hopefully makes it to the houses and the businesses. But and then I thought of something else. The in the drought plan, there are. I mean, we are working on some other potential ways during a drought that, you know, I think MUD and Lincoln could one work together a little bit, where MUD starts taking more water from the Missouri, leaving more water in the Platte for Lincoln potentially. And then they're still working on a possible joint interconnection that, I mean, that's probably many years away, but they're still looking at that idea.
Thank you, Paul.
Yep.
Any other questions? Thank you very much for your presentation,
you.
Jennifer and Paul. Item number 7, review and recommendation on Missouri River Levy R-616 and R-613 improvement project, ground construction, contract. Paul Woodard.
All right, back again here. The where we kind of started and where we're at today, just to review that a little bit for you. This is the big construction project to enhance the levees around south of Bellevue, along the Missouri River, the Papillion Creek, and the Platte River. If we need to, we can look at a map here, but we issued that contract right before the flood was actually occurred, and a good bid at that time was right at almost $23 million, $22.8 million. So over time, after the flood, there's been a lot of time that kind of went by that we couldn't work on the entire construction site. There's been some changes in kind of where we can get fill, where we can't, some of those things. And that's reflected into, we've had 9 change orders to date. We're currently at the 10% limit that staff is able to recommend any more changes to the construction contract. So what we're looking at tonight is an approval by the board to approve this next change order, which would take us over and above the 10% to about 14.8%. And the construction contract, of course, is still ongoing. So there could be some changes after this, but this is kind of where we would sit right now. Lindy is also here if we have any questions on reviewing some of those things that have changed. I know the things in the new change order, if you looked at that, we're getting some other borrow material that's needed to finish the levees. Let's go to the map. Bring the whole thing up and back up a little bit. Okay, so I guess construction and currently all fill would be completed. We didn't have to fill or raise this section of the levee down to here. That was basically left at grade. There was a large sand berm placed along that entire section. That is done. All the pipes were rehabbed if necessary. And then along the Papillion Creek, basically along both sides now, all the raises have been completed on that. So from K-Part down, the levee raises are completed all the way to the mouth with the Missouri, including the flood wall we had to build. And all the fill, so to raise those levees, all that material has come from the benches of the patio. So in between the levees, before you get to the bottom of the creek, we've excavated that material out. It's been good material to use. That's what's been used for fill on the entire Papillion Creek section. And we also completed, go slide a little bit south if you can. There you go. So we, that fill along the creeks that we currently had got us probably to about there south of Highway 34 in terms of raising the levees. And then we need extra material. We now need material to finish raising the levee from basically the Missouri all the way along the Platte. And to do that, we're going to look at getting some more material from our patio benches, just not within the project limits or project area. So if you kind of move to the northwest a little bit, we'll be borrowing fill material along the Papillion Creek from K-Part Road North. Hopefully that gets us quite a bit of the way using that. And if we need more material, we're looking here between 25th and 36th Street on the south side of the patio to get some more material. So that's mostly what this change order is, some 700 and some thousand, is going to these other areas, getting the borrow from there, and hauling it down to the Platte River. So, you have any questions on that for me or Lindy?
Thanks, Paul.
Well, the cost of that versus having acquiring the soil from another source.
We did have, kind of a little bit of a comparison that what Pink would use to get it. Actually, Pink was going to look at getting it from their borrow site, which is across the river. However, that material didn't pass testing. And I think this is approximately the same cost.
And in addition to this, we had originally identified 27,000 cubic yards that were going to come from the Rumsey West mitigation site. But the Corps ended up using that material for their repairs. So when they did the repairs on the system after the flood, the NRD was required to provide the material for that. So we exhausted that borrow area as well. So that was always planned to be used for this project. So that also brought a shortage of it.
Lindy, could you identify yourself for the record?
I'm sorry. Lindy Rogers, Fire Engineering.
Thank you.
Paul, what does it mean to take the material from the benches? What does that mean, the benches?
Don't probably have a good cross section. Why don't you just go back to the map?
Oh, you just dig it out of the creek or what?
Zoom in. zoom in pretty close on the papule, if you would. So right about here, zoom in right here, over this way. Okay. So zoom in a little bit more. Yeah, through there. This was our largest borrow area that we had for the project. And so this is right kind of next to Offutt. The levee's over here along the railroad tracks. This is a big flat area, basically the trail's down there. And then all the way up to the creek's actually, you know, it drops off to the creek right here in the middle. So this flat area has accumulated silt over many, many years. And so there was as much as four to four and a half feet of material sitting on top of this area, and we've used all of that.
Okay.
We've excavated all of that. And basically we're continuing, we're moving upstream now, doing the same thing. It's just a further haul, and we're disturbing our other project areas, right? We're stripping the grass off. We have construction going on in areas we didn't necessarily plan on having construction going on in.
I see.
And Paul said that material was silt, but it's actually pretty good silty clay, which we need to use to make the levees out of. I just want to make sure people say we're building out of silt.
Okay.
Great, did you have?
I had a question also. We're now at 14.8% over the original contract price. What percentage of the project is completed?
And that doesn't necessarily reflect where the whole project is at. We have $6.7 million remaining in the current contract budget, which would be that we are 70%
completed, yes.
About 70% completed right now.
Do you have an anticipation date, if everything goes well, when this will be done?
We're working to get all the fill material for the levees done by the end of this year, and hopefully then all the sand berms done. If we needed to finish up sand berms, we could do that over the winter months. But basically, we did, one of those change orders did change the effective date. So after the flood, it was June 1st of this year. That's now been moved back to July 1st of next year, 2022. So basically within this next budget year, they need to have the project complete. So
a rosy, optimistic viewpoint would be July of next year?
Yeah, and I mean, I think we're pushing that as a hard, you not only have all the stuff done, but you finished up all the checklist items, all the minor items that we have to finish.
Okay, thank you.
Director Johnson.
Tim, if you don't mind, I'd like to rephrase your question. Percent completion, you threw out a number of dollars in the contract. I want to know percent completion of work on the ground. I mean, even though it's been extended a year, you threw a number of, oh, we got $6 million left, or whatever. I don't care about that. I care about how much physical work there is on the ground. So percentage-wise, we've done this much, and we need to do this much more. You have an idea of percentage-wise how much physical work there is? Forget about the dollars.
I mean, they've been paid for what has been done. But, oh, okay, I see. You're saying the numbers don't always match the amount of actual.
I know each task, you equate dollars to it in order to pay them, right? So the tasks that are remaining, what percentage of that is to the total contract? Does that make sense to you?
I would say that's right at 70% as well.
Or no,
I mean,
percent
there's
30% remaining.
We've completed about 70% of the project. Yeah. The tasks remaining to be completed are about 30% of the
okay.
project.
Okay. Regardless of dollars of time.
Regardless
so.
Of dollars.
Okay. Well,
I mean, when you look at the of levies that need to be
that's not what I wanted to know.
Yeah.
It's very equivalent to that 70% story. 30% story would be raised.
So the rate, and this has been delayed for a year because of getting in there to do the work. The original completion date was now and surpassed, but because of the change orders, we're there for next July.
Yeah.
Less than a year.
What do you mean?
Yeah, a loss of the year. A loss of a year, basically.
2019 flood.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions, Director?
I'll make the motion that we accept staff recommendation.
I'll second that.
Anyone from the public wish to speak to this item? Roll call.
Savinsky?
Yes.
Kieser?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
Jack?
Yes.
And Chairperson?
Aye. Thank you. Item number 8, review and recommendation on Elk Creek Channel Stabilization EWP project bids. Justin Novak.
Good evening, directors. I come before you tonight to talk about the bids that we received for the Elk Creek project. As we discussed before, you want to go to the one page down there, Curtis? The Elk Creek project here is located just east of Jackson off Highway 20. This map might look pretty familiar to you, but here is the left bank that we're going to be repairing. The right bank was done in 2013. And we, as a reminder, we are receiving 75% of the construction costs for this project through the NRCS Emergency Watershed Fund. So this is a very good project for the local community up there. We did get all the landowners on board. We've closed on two of the three properties, working on the last one right now. So things are looking good. We had over almost 35 people request the plan sets for the project. We had about 20 people show up to the site showing, and we had received 8 bids. So we did receive some very favorable bids. I do have a couple pictures to just show you of the current condition of the levee, if you want to scroll down there, Curtis. So here's about halfway down the levee. You can see how bad the sloughing is going on the inside part of this levee. It's actually to the top of the levee itself. We are pretty close to a failure point on this if we were to receive, you know, additional flooding like we did in 2019. So time is of the essence, and that's why we've really been trying to push this project along, and also as well as the federal funding attached to it. One more picture if you go down below there. Just another one kind of showing some of the sloughing all the way down the bank here. This is one of our weir structures. This was an alternate A bid item, just to kind of give you an idea of what that was for repairing all this rock along the levee itself. Go down one more. This just kind of gives you an atypical cross-section. What we're doing is, this is the old levee here, and what we're going to be doing is building a 10-to-1 bench, 3-to-1 slope to the creek, and then we're actually putting this rock riprap launch trench. And what that does is, over time, as the banks erode back to the trench, the rock itself will launch into the creek and help stabilize the toe of the levee. It's actually a very creative way to get around the Corps of Engineers 404 permitting process. So we let Mother Nature put that rock in there for us. So all we're going to be doing, and this is why we required the additional property, we're going to be pushing the levee back about 50 feet, making it more of a manageable slope on the top so you can actually get down, and then you can also mow the insides of the slope as well. And then the farmers, with the extra spoil, will actually be a farmable slope on the backside to also help stabilize that backside of the levee. So the farmers have been well received with this, and we're looking to get this project move along. So go to the last. This is a recommendation letter on the bids that we received, and we can skip past that part. It's fine. We'll go to the last part, which this is the bid tab. This is the meat and potatoes over here. So there was an engineer's probable construction cost estimate of $2,517,400, and that kind of fell in line with what we had applied for federal funds. And a lot of times when you apply for federal funds, you want to make sure you have plenty of money built into these costs. So we got some very, very favorable bids from some very good contractors. So our low bid was actually $1,060,267.88, which is, I didn't do the math, I'm going to guess about 35-40% of the engineer's estimate. Normally this would kind of maybe throw a red flag at you, but Lieber Construction is a very reputable company that we've worked with before in the past. They actually worked on the large Pigeon Jones Dam that we built out there outside of Hubbard. They're well known in the community, and they have the equipment and the manpower to complete this project. I think we just hit a very good timing. I've had a lot of discussions with Jordan from Lieber. And their big thing was they didn't really have a lot of work here at the end of August, September, October. And they're a large company with a lot of trucking, a lot of manpower. So this kind of fell in their lap as a good project for them to kind of keep all their guys busy. And they wanted to make sure they got the project. So they gave us an extremely favorable bid. So we're comfortable with them doing it. Olson's is comfortable with them doing it. So I think they're looking to begin here, hopefully they're thinking the end of August. So we're going to be getting rolling on this project ASAP if you guys approve this contract. So do you want me to? Any questions?
Thank you, Justin. We can have a motion on this item.
Move with staff recommendation.
Second.
Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Directors? Roll call.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
All right.
Thank you, directors.
Thank you. That completes my recommendation.
The time is 4:45. We'll call the FEL subcommittee to order. Notification of the Open Meeting Act is posted in the back. Quorum call.
Bradley?
Here.
Conley?
Here.
Davidson?
Here.
McCormick?
Here.
Chairperson?
Here. Adoption agenda?
Who?
Second.
Roll call.
Conley?
Aye.
Davidson?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
Bradley?
Yes.
Caesar?
Yes. I have before me proof of publication of this meeting notice. Item 6, review and recommendation of issuance of flood control and water control enhancement bonds. John Winkler, Paul Greger, D.A. Davidson, and Tyler Mullen, Barrett Home, LLP.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, as Rich stated, we do have Paul Greger from D.A. Davidson and Tyler Mullen from Barrett Home, who is the district's bond counsel on these types of issues. So before you is a resolution to approve a $30 million bond issue for flood protection and water quality enhancement bonds, and that is to fund right-of-way acquisition and construction of several proposed flood control projects within the district's jurisdiction. If you look on the memo, you'll see the table of the projects that are to be funded. In addition, I placed on everybody's near their book is a list of the right-of-way that we've received confirmation from landowners that they would be willing to sell on Dam Site 7, Dam Site 12, and Dam Site 19. In addition, there would be construction revenue for WP4 and WP2. Originally in July, we talked, we thought $25 million would be the right number. However, we're requesting or recommending not to exceed $30 million, and the reason is another landowner contacted us between the July and this meeting, indicating that he was interested in selling as well, and his land is projected to be over $3 million for Dam Site 12. So we've boosted it to it's $28.9 million. Is the total. Again, we requested $30 million to round out. I'm expecting we'll get some additional people to come forward if, in fact, the board approves the bond resolution. I'm working with Baird Holm and D.A. Davidson, and they can, again, fill you in on interest rates and fees and things like that. Also, this resolution complies with all the statutes that guide the NRD's bonding authority, which is much different than some. They, in fact, ensure that that is correct and that we cross all the I's, dot all the T's, dot all the I's, cross all the T's. So they're here to answer any questions regarding any specifics of those, and I'm here to answer any questions as far as programmatic. The main idea is, besides, obviously, we've heard from several landowners who've come to meetings and indicated, you know, that the district is holding up their ability to do what they want with their property, if it's sell it or if it's develop it or whatever they may have in store. This, in fact, if this is approved, the additional construction money, that will go toward shaving off about 2 or 3 years of completion time of the reservoirs that we have in the plan. So it will actually compress some time, which is good for us. Time is money. Nothing's getting cheaper, obviously, when 5.4% inflation, as well as what we've seen land prices do over the last 5 to 10 years. So I'll open it up to any questions you may have. And, again, Paul is here as well as Tyler to answer any questions.
Anybody have a question of the GM or others?
I'd like to move staff recommendation on this item.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion?
Just a question. We've noticed the 10-year rates have fallen dramatically over the last several months. Does that help our cause in issuing these bonds?
I think so. We're looking at bonds with a final maturity no later than 2042. So we will have some short-term paper in there. We'll have tax-exempt bonds. When I think of the 10-year, I'm thinking of taxable yields.
Right.
And the spreads are a little bit different. But what we're seeing today on, a 20-year final maturity, I think the cost of capital is going to be at about 2.3% if we were to sell today, maybe 2.25% even.
And a few months ago, you said about just under 3, is that right?
I said at or below 3, upper 2s. I just asked the desk for a real look today. I said, if we had to go to market today, don't give me any cushion whatsoever, where do we execute? And we thought 2.25%. 230 on a, if
so it's improved quite a bit.
It's improved a little bit, but I always like to have a little bit of fade in there. So I would say if we're talking openly about what do we think the cost of money is going to be, I still like that at or below 3%, but just wanted to give you all a snapshot of today's true bond market. We do have a little bit of work to do before we'll be in a position to sell bonds, so we do have a little bit of interest rate exposure. There's a draft timeline attached in the packet, too, that just kind of, it doesn't commit us to a timeline, but it just kind of outlines the steps that we have to take with your finance and administration team. We've got to get an official statement put together, which we're working with Tyler on right now. We need to get that to the rating agencies, and we need to have a conference call with Standard & Poor's to affirm the rating. We have to do that each time we do an issuance. Earliest, I think we'd comfortably be selling bonds would be September with an early October close, but that schedule is just that I just put together a hypothetical really to lay out the steps that need to happen. We're going to be working at your all direction and John's to tell us when you really need money, and then we'll back into a date from there. But we want to get the paperwork done. We want to get the rating work handled so that we can kind of hurry up and wait, if you will.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions from the directors?
What is the approximate cost per year that we pay these bonds over 20 years? Is that what it is?
Yeah, if you look also there in the back of this sheet that says kind of the total bond issue is the debt service schedule. Again, this will be based off, I think, the earlier information. So if you look at 2022, in this next budget cycle, it would be $447,125. So we would have to build that into the September budget. And again, we're not... And to do that, we would not add any more to our request for taxpayer funds. We would just cut some other areas to fund that. And then if you look, it's like $1.8 million over the next would be 19 years. Again, that will adjust according to what type of percentage we get on the bonds. So
okay.
It probably would be less. I think Paul does a good job of kind of being very conservative. So usually our debt service is usually less than what they project.
All right, thank you.
I mean, knock on wood that we don't.
we do the best we can to manage expectations, and we've been pretty fortunate with good execution. So I feel good about the numbers. I can't control the markets. As we all know, things can change in a couple of months. But at least we've been hitting our targets lately with tax-exempt bond issuances.
Further questions of directors? Anybody from the general public wish to make a comment? Seeing none. Roll call.
Davidson?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
Bradley?
Yes.
Conley?
Aye.
Jefferson?
Yes. Thank you. Thank you very much, Jim.
Thank you all.
Have a good afternoon.
Item 7, review and recommendation of FY22 budget, draft number 2, John Winkler.
Okay, thanks again, Mr. Chairman. Attached, and you will find in your packet the August draft of the budget. Just a reminder, this is draft 2, so there's still several unknowns. We don't know final valuations, and we are anticipating a 3.5% increase in the budget. However, we're assuming that we're going to, just by what we've heard so far, that we'll get a valuation increase of anywhere from the upper 6, let's say 6.5 to 7%. So I think realistically what you'll see is we will lower our mill levy to just include the 3.5%. So basically we're asking for 3.5% more than we did last year, regardless of what the final valuation will be. So what that means to you and your constituents is if they did not receive a valuation increase this year, they will get a 3.5% reduction on their NRD property taxes this year. So this is the 16th out of the 17 years that we've lowered the mill levy or kept it the same. We've actually lowered it 10 years, and we've kept it the same for 6. So I would say that we took Omaha's 2% reduction in their mill levy, and we raised them 1.5% to lower ours. So as I discussed at the July meeting, LB 408 was a property tax relief measure that we worked with Senator Linehan and Senator Breezy, who introduced it. And we had discussions with them, and they offered an amendment in favor for us. And so we thought it was important, although it didn't pass, we thought it was important to live up to the spirit of that. And so we have. And so this would have fallen within the guidelines of LB 408 if, in fact, it did pass. Although we're not restricted by it, no one's restricted by it, we thought it was important that we kept ours the same, or that we honored kind of that commitment. And so you'll see several other entities that are saying that they will keep their mill levy the same, which is great, and they will be collecting 6-7% more in revenue. So we think that we are doing a very good job in this, and to you, a credit to you as leaders of the district and as elected folks that we're able to do this. The changes in the August draft are reflected in yellow if you go throughout the document, and they're not very many. They're very minor, and they're typically, they were changes in where we allocated revenue in various programs, and it basically maybe switched between professional services and construction or office equipment and communications or something like that. So they're highlighted in yellow. You can look at those if you have any questions on that. We do have the public input meeting on Thursday, and then our budget hearing and adoption of the budget and set the tax levy for the next fiscal year is September 9th. That would be the next board meeting. And we're having it here at the NRC this year. We're not going up to Dakota City as we've done in the past. So I would ask or be able to answer any questions you have about the budget, kind of the philosophy, what we're funding, what we're not. But again, as indicated, if the bond resolution passes on Thursday, we will again, this budget will not go above 3.5%. We will find those cuts somewhere within the budget to fund the debt service on that new bond resolution. So happy to answer any questions you might have.
Can we get a motion on the
second.
Any comments from the directors? Further comments? How about the general public? Seeing none, roll call.
Kermit?
Yes.
Bradley?
Yes.
Conley?
Aye.
Davidson?
Yes.
Jefferson?
Yes. That concludes my our agenda. We stand adjourned.
You guys want a 3-minute break?
Not for me, but.
All right. And pass the gavel there, Fred. Okay, the time is 4:56. I'd like to call the Personnel, Legislative, and Public Affairs Subcommittee meeting to order. Notification of the Open Meetings Act posting and announcement of the meeting procedures are attached. Quorum call, please.
Fowler?
Yes.
Jack?
Here.
McCormick?
Here.
And Chairperson?
Here. Yes. Here.
Good.
I'm reading too much, sorry. Adoption of agenda?
Move. Second.
Roll call.
Jack?
Here.
McCormick?
Yes.
Butler?
Yes.
And Chairperson?
Yes. I have proof of publication of the meeting notice, which will become part of the public record. Item number 6, review and recommendation of the Papio Missouri River Natural Resources District resolution on Executive Order 14008, Director Rich Teaser.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you remember, last month I came to the board in during my report and talked about the President Biden's 30-30 proposal, and that the NARD as a mass at the last NARD meeting, everybody opposed it. And Dean Edson at that time suggested that all the districts, if they would care to, is to make a resolution that could be just passed out. There will be a resolution to oppose the 30-30 plan presented at the annual meeting in Kearney in September. And I did ask John to draft one for this district, which you have in front of you. And it's very generic. Basically, I'm not trying to put words in General's mouth, but we are, Nebraska is the leader in natural resources. We protect our natural resources better than any of the other states and our water. And for the federal government to come in and say, you're going to have to reserve 30% of your agricultural, privately owned agricultural land, or your water. It just didn't sit well with the NARB. And I asked John to draft a resolution that was very similar in nature to that that the Tri-Basin NRB drafted and presented at our last meeting. And again, we just feel that we do it better than the federal government. And we like to keep it local. And John, do you have some comments? Or?
Just real quick, and Rich, you explained it very well. And so what we attempted to do is we attempted to draw attention to not just the 30 by 30 plan, but any federal effort to make conservation mandatory. So it doesn't matter if it's this plan or any other plan. I think the last paragraph says it all, that we express our opposition to any effort by the federal government to pursue mandatory conservation efforts, and to also any effort, even if it's state or federal, to take away the ability of local boards such as yourself to be involved and to guide conservation. So I think we wanted to walk the line between stating that conservation is a great thing and we've been doing it for 50 plus years and we do it better than anyone, but then also to make the distinction between we still think conservation is important, we just don't think mandatory conservation is the process you should follow. It should stay at the local jurisdiction and it should be fully funded. It should have more funding, but we should take away any of the mandates or anything that's identified in the 30 by 30 plan or any other federal plan that may be out there. So that's we walk that line, I think, a little bit better than the other resolution. So, but Rich was spot on.
Any director questions, comments? Can we get a motion?
I can't make it.
So moved.
Second.
Director Bradley?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And there may be somebody in the audience that may want to speak from the public on this. And I will save most of my comments for Thursday evening, should this pass to Thursday evening. But I just want, for the record, say that I want to implore the PLPA committee to not pass this resolution. Subcommittee, and what I have. Thanks.
Thank you, Larry. Any other directors? Seeing none, roll call.
Wait a minute. There's got to be audience.
Oh, public participation. Thank you. Anyone from the public wish to speak? There we go. Please identify yourself, if you would, for the board, please, and your address.
My name's Edison McDonald. I'm representing GC Resolve. That's an Omaha-based agricultural development company. My address is 909 West 10th Street, Hickman, Nebraska. I'm appearing tonight on behalf of GC Resolve because we do a lot of work with a number of regenerative programs, cover cropping programs, to go and work on encouraging farmers as to pathways that they can go and work with this. And we're a little bit confused and concerned as to this resolution and as to the direction as to why the board would oppose this. And I do have copies here, I guess, in terms of the guidance. Can I hand these out? Yeah, sorry, I only had six because I thought it was just a five-member committee. Anyways, I do have concerns in terms of, saying why is there this opposition to the 30 by 30 plan? I know that there's a lot of concern that there are mandates. However, looking through the details of the plan, I can't find any specific section that really identifies mandates. Instead, it talks about principles. So there are eight principles that it lists. Principle number one, pursuing a collaborative and inclusive approach to conservation. Principle number 2, conserving America's lands and waters for the benefit of all people. Principle number 3, support locally led and locally designed conservation efforts. Principle number 4, honor tribal sovereignty and support the priorities of tribal nations. Principle number 5, pursuing conservation and restoration approaches that create jobs and support healthy communities. Principle number 6, honoring private property rights and support the voluntary stewardship efforts of private landowners and fishers. Principle number 7, use science as a guide. And principle number 8, build on existing tools and strategies with an emphasis on flexibility and adaptive approaches. So in particular to me, it seems like principles 3 and 6 seem to show there is a clear intent. This is not targeted as a land grab, but instead as a collaborative partnership. And we've seen from statements from the administration, and particularly from Secretary Vilsack, who's indicated, you know, this is supposed to be about further developing voluntary programs. And within the heart of it, 30 by 30 program, and this, again, I'll just circle back, it says it's a preliminary report, so I guess I'm kind of confused. People keep talking about 30 by 30 until there's actually a final report action. I think this is just, you know, saying, hey, this is the direction we want to head, and beginning to open up conversations with local entities like the Natural Resource District. But I think as I look throughout the plan, it seems like they're really trying to go and say, we want to support these local efforts that y'all are already doing, things like cover crop programs, things like CRP, things like buffer strips, and making sure that you do really have that emphasis in those local-led efforts. And I think especially circling back to principle number 6, it says honor private property rights and support the voluntary stewardship efforts of private landowners and fishers. My family's farmers for generations. I was always taught, you know, just like we were talking about earlier, Nebraska is an amazing leader in a lot of conservation areas. But what I think, you know, what it really is targeting, this program is saying, how do we go and bring those federal supports for those localized programs that help to go and meet those larger national goals? So we are definitely opposed to this proposal and to the concerns here, and I'd love to chat with anybody if there is a specific piece within the identified 30 by 30 preliminary report. And, you know, we'd like to see instead efforts to go and make sure that we're focusing on bringing back those federal dollars to our local entities, to our NRDs, to go and further support the amazing efforts that the NRD is already doing. So thank you for your time, and I'll be around if you have questions.
Thank you. John?
So real quick, I'm glad that he came, because if in fact that is what the program is, if you read the resolution states exactly all the positive benefits that he mentioned. And so if you read the resolution, this basically says we oppose federal mandates, federal overreach. Now, if the 30 by 30 plan is what is advertised, is what's being advertised by Vilsack and others, then this fully supports it. Because all the things he mentioned, it's supported in this resolution. The only thing that this opposes is mandatory federal guidelines. That's all this opposes. It says the 30 by 30 plan, the only mention is the plan is vague and the plan needs more details. But it doesn't specifically state we oppose the plan, we oppose federal mandates. That's all this says. So we agree with him, and we agree with all of those things that he mentioned that are good for conservation. And if the 30 by 30 plan came out and said, yes, we're going to increase funding, this is all local control, great, we're all for it. But until that point in time, then that's what this says.
Director Bradley?
Mr. Chairman, is there any way we can tweak this proposal by Thursday and take out the oppose mandatory government mandates, strike that from the proposal?
Well, I believe we have a motion to approve this as is, so I don't know that we can do that, Larry. Any other comments, questions? Brent?
He can do a motion to amend the resolution, if that's what you're asking.
Well, I'm not on the subcommittee.
You have to be on the
not on the subcommittee.
Okay, roll call.
Borman?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
Jack?
Yes.
And Jefferson?
Yes.
And with that, we are adjourned.
Thank you.
You think we'd be done? Oh, we're not.
No, we have PLPA meetings. I'm a little rusty.
What's still left?
He needs his gavel.
Got to whack the gavel. There we go. The time is 5:12 approximately. I call the subcommittee of the Ad Hoc Consultant Selection Subcommittee to order. There's a notification in the Open Meetings Act posting announcement of the meeting in the back and a quorum call.
Hang on, I'm Bradley?
Here.
McCormick?
Here.
Sapinski?
Here.
Begley? Chairperson?
Here.
Teaser, here.
Yeah, alternate. Rich stepping
Rich
in.
Rich Teaser?
Mm-hmm. Adoption agenda?
So moved.
Second.
Publication, meeting notice, copy of the Open Meetings Act is posted in the back wall. He said, prior to turning the agenda for today's meeting, I would like to announce a procedure that would use the meeting with respect to each agenda item. The director will first hear staff proposals, recommendations, and the public will be given the opportunity to speak to the item. We'll ask the directors to discuss the item, take action. We ask the public not interrupt the director's discussion and actions. Thank you very much. So, review and recommendation of the initial screening of proposals for consultant selection interviews, Mr. Terry Schumacher.
Good evening on this warm August evening. With the Davis Creek WFVO project, we request proposals for professional services necessary for the WFVO project, which is located in Burton, Washington counties. And we did this in accordance with the Natural Resource Conservation Guidelines. The project will consist of preparing a preliminary investigation feasibility report, which is a PIFR, and if funded by the NRCS, the preparation and implementation of a watershed work plan. The district advertised in the Omaha World Herald on July 9th, and on the district's website, proposals were due at noon on July 30th, 2021. The original proposal was attached. There has been a change to the schedule. In my probably overzealous of getting the project going, I had that we could negotiate a contract at the September board meeting, but that is not possible since we are interviewing on the September 2nd at 4 p.m., so most likely this would come to the board in October to approve the agreement. We did receive two proposals from the following firms, HDR-JO, and that's where we're at. I have a memo with a staff recommendation. Basically, we reviewed the proposals, and we interview HDR-JO in the order presented. So hand that out, and I guess if we have any questions.
Terry, the next step is then September 2nd. We'll interview these firms.
Yeah,
you'll be the one inviting them.
Yeah.
What time would that be?
4 o'clock.
4 o'clock.
4 o'clock.
Thank you.
And the interviews will be basically scheduled for like 25 minutes. So it'll be 4:30.
Thank you. And I just want to bring up, did everybody on the subcommittee get the two proposals from? Yes.
Yes, Ted.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay, we're good then. All right, thank you. Are there any other questions for Terry? So the next time the subcommittee will meet will be September 2nd at 4 o'clock here. All right? A motion to move for the
staff recommendation. Staff recommendation.
Motion to go with staff recommendation.
Any other discussion? Director Thompson.
There are only two firms. Can you explain why only two? I mean, usually these things are more popular than that.
I don't really have an explanation, Jim. I know I did have a couple firms reach out to me, and they just weren't prepared to take on a project like this at the moment.
Did we send anything to other, like the bidders mailing this or anything like that, or just the two ads on our website and the paper? Don't we have a normal mailing list we send these things to?
Yeah, we have a bidders list.
There's a bidders list, and they all get the
emails. In this case?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's on the website, and that is, and that's an automatic. Any firm that's registered with us, they automatically get a notification. And some we contact beyond that even, just to make sure they got it. It's a good question, Jim, and I wonder, too. I think one of them, Olson's out of this ballgame, okay, with the staff they have now. That's one we probably would have looked at. I don't know if anybody's Olson's here. We didn't get one from Fire. Normally we might have.
We did not get an RFP.
You didn't get a notice?
We did not get an email. We did not get a mail. And I think it probably fell off when we weren't checking the website. We did not get a notification.
Oh, wow. So, that's not good to hear. Yeah, because they've done a number of them. Fire has. And so that's, we got some checking to do on our website then. What's going on there?
Because we usually get emails and hard copies.
Yeah.
But for sure, always an email. We didn't get it this time.
I'll follow up with our news.
Yep, that's unfortunate.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? Director Bradley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I just want to maybe check with legal counsel. Would we open a can of worms with HDR and JEO, or if we put this back out for bid? Because I almost feel comfortable having three. But yet, has the ship already sailed? I'm comfortable. I mean, you know, they're reputable firms.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, this is the first I'm hearing of it. I mean, the part about procurement has got to be a level playing field. Mm-hmm. And if some people aren't getting notifications, it makes me a little concerned about them getting an opportunity to send in a proposal. So, I mean, I take the point of, you know, I'll be on a time crunch. So, if I could, I'd get back to you on Thursday, but your point's taken.
Can you do it by Thursday? Get back to us?
Well, I can. Yeah. I mean, but does it give Fire and the other groups enough time to...
Okay. It was advertised, though, on the website, right?
That's correct.
And in the paper.
And in the paper.
The website email that it automatically sends out evidently didn't reach Fire.
Or maybe others.
Because I've got the affidavit from the newspaper.
It was in the World Herald.
Mike, you have a question?
It seems to me that there's been some sort of glitch in the advertising process, and that it would be much like we would go back to bid for other errors or problems that happen. I think they should at least reopen the RFQ.
How did
you re-advertise it?
HDR and JEO know about it. They knew about it.
Yeah, well, they may have gotten a notice and then others may not for some reason. I don't know. Or they read the newspaper.
I don't understand. They apparently followed the procedure and submitted in a timely fashion. How did they do it? nobody else can do it.
Notice, I don't know.
I think our only requirement is that we advertise in the paper. I think the email thing is more of a convenience to make sure that we're getting, I don't know if that's not required by any statute that you send them RFPs. The only requirement per statute is that you advertise in the paper. So, I mean, you can open it up, fine, but, I mean, it's not, you're not bound by it.
Director Thompson?
Yeah, I think it's ridiculous to open it up. We got two qualified firms. There's no set rule. We have to require three. I think it's a disservice to those who did respond that now you're going to what? Just for perhaps fire or others? I don't know. But that kind of throws a procurement process in upheaval if you can't depend on the system that John Winkler just identified, which is according to our manual that we have, our procedure. So it's been published, been on the website. We got two firms. It's rocking.
Yeah, I agree with what Mr. Thompson's saying, but at the same time, we got to make sure everybody's getting the same email. So if two firms are getting the emails and others aren't, we need to make sure that's corrected or not. You know, is that something we can look into? Is who's getting the emails?
Yeah, we can correct it, but I'm just saying that's more of our process as good convenience and to try to stimulate, obviously, to get more bids.
Yes. But if we can look to see if those two got it and nobody else did, that's
that's what we need to
figure out. No, other firms did get it.
Yeah. Okay.
They reached out to me, and they just explained why they weren't going to, or they asked questions. And I mean, but I didn't solicit, personally, I didn't solicit any firms.
So we will look specifically at fire, but then also to make sure if we missed other people, if other people didn't get the notice as well.
Is there a question over here? No.
I confer with Director Thompson that, it could be that fire, and I love fire, they just may have missed it. They may have had it and missed it. Mm-hmm. And, shit happens, excuse me.
I think sort of Director Thompson might have answered my question. So was it published in the newspaper?
Yes. Well,
then if it was published in the newspaper,
that's
then,
the only requirement.
Yeah. And that's one of those. Yeah.
Right here, there, okay. If you want to see it.
Okay, gotcha.
Any other questions? Are we voting on something then, or what are we doing?
Roll call.
Okay, roll call.
McCormick.
No.
Pinsky.
No.
Caesar.
Yes.
Larry Bradley.
Yes.
Chairperson.
Yes.
Passes 3-2.
Other business? We are adjourned.
I thought it was only four in the committee.
Was it five?